just the privilege of truly as a church that we have going out and partaking in missions. So just the way so to understand how it's going to look like, we're first going to have two Canada mission trip updates that are going to be shared. And then we're going to have Pastor David and Mark come and give an update on their trip to Ukraine. And for Canada, we had two really short mission trips that were over the weekend from Friday to Sunday. First one went to Cranbrook, B.C., and the second one went to Caslow, B.C. And on those trips, we had a couple of people who actually were part of the boat trip. So as we start sharing, we'll first hear from Gary. He was on boat trips, and then kind of the closure of the Canada trips, we'll hear from Julie, who was also on boat trips. And then we will have Pastor David and Mark come up, and they will give us an update on Ukraine. But we're also going to do something different. Our first trip to Canada was to Cranbrook, as I pointed out, but we're actually going to start with Caslow team, the second team that went later in the month to Canada, to Caslow, B.C. Now, just a small information in regards to these churches. These are our sister churches, Calvary Chapels, one in Cranbrook, one in Caslow. Pastor in Cranbrook is Steve Moon. I had the opportunity of knowing him for quite a long time, over 10 years. He's a sweet brother in the Lord. And second one is Glenn Stewart, who is in Caslow as well. I had the opportunity of knowing him for quite a while. He's faithfully serving there in Caslow. These are smaller communities in British Columbia, as well as these Calvaries are kind of isolated from rest of the Calvary chapels around. So the closest Calvary for Cranbrook is actually us in Whitefish. So this was a wonderful opportunity to go and minister to our brothers and sisters there. So Gary, please come up and we'll start with you.
I want to start out with a couple of verses from 1 John 4:11 and 12. This might sound familiar. Dear friends, since God so loved us, we also ought to love one another. No one has ever seen God, but if we love one another, God lives in us and his love is made complete in us. So I just want you to think about what your best way to look like God is. So that's how we do it. We love one another, especially in the body. A day or two after returning from the second trip in Canada, I was asked by a friend, "Where did you see Jesus in Canada?" And this is my response. I saw Jesus in Canada through answered prayer for traveling mercies. He kept us safe wherever we went. I saw Jesus in all his glory and majesty through the mountains, the millions of trees, the beautiful lakes, rivers, creeks flowing through the landscape, and even a bull moose standing in a parking lot at the top of a pass. I saw Jesus in the simple yet complex life of a honeybee. Our first host was a beekeeper who shared with me his love for the honeybee. Very interesting. I saw Jesus in conversations, hugs, and hospitality shared between believers in the Lord. I saw Jesus in a couple that opened up their beautiful log cabin home to us, and we gathered for a barbecue and for great fellowship. I saw Jesus in the woman that lived there as she shared with me about her family of five children, two of whom were no longer with us due to tragedies in their lives. She and she being bound to a wheelchair because of an accident in the ocean while on vacation in Mexico, never stopped smiling as she shared her faith with me. I saw Jesus through our hosts in Cranbrook as we prayed for their daughter and son-in-law who were moving towards a divorce. Last I heard, the divorce is on hold, so please keep praying for them. I saw Jesus as we prayed for a brother in Caslow who asked for prayer for his unbelieving wife. I saw Jesus through the testimonies and baptisms of three young adults at the lake in Cranbrook. I saw Jesus through Pastor Steve and his wife Shauna of Cranbrook, and through Pastor Glenn and his wife Heidi of Caslow, who were very gracious and hospitable to us all. They opened up their homes and shared their families and congregations with us. I saw Jesus through our teams who gave of themselves, and Pastor Dan and the worship team as we stood with our sister churches in Cranbrook and Caslow in fellowship. I saw Jesus once again in the fellowship and common conversations we had in the time spent traveling together. And last but not least, I saw Jesus to a six-year-old boy of whom it's been said he's never met a stranger. He was willing to befriend an old man on the long road back from Castle, B.C.
Hi, I'm Joanna. I had the opportunity to go to the Castle missions trip with Alicia, and when it first popped up as a opportunity to go, I wasn't sure if I could make my schedule work, but as soon as I started clearing things, it just all kind of fell together, so that was pretty cool. And this was a neat opportunity for us because this is Alicia's first time, like, really out of the country. I mean, there was another time we, like, popped over the border, but this was her first time out of America, and she seems to be interested in missions, so this was a cool opportunity for us to kind of have some one-on-one time as well and get out of the country and get to meet other Christians. We got to stay in this house, which was crazy cool. So Dave and Linda, I think Gary mentioned that Linda was in the wheelchair, and they were just the most hospitable people ever. They treated us like family. They had a hot tub that we got to hang out in, which was really cool as well. And so we got to stay there, and their gardening was crazy. I don't know how they grow so many things, especially with it being a little bit of a colder climate even. I mean, it's not colder than here, but being colder for some of the things they were growing. So they were like plant magicians. So that was really neat. So we stayed there, and then we also got to help with Sunday morning services, which was cool. So me and Julie tag-teamed on music, and then she taught Sunday school, but I was kind of another person just as a bouncer to make sure nothing crazy happened. So this is the church here, and it was like stepping back in time, like the carpet. I mean, this is super retro. I loved it with the pews. And what was cool, too, about just the community, it's much smaller. I don't know the numbers of how big the city is, but it felt a lot smaller than Kalispell. So everyone kind of knew everybody, and you could tell, like, the people in the church all just were really included others in their lives, and they knew each other really well. So that was cool to get that sense of small town community. And just not only the connections that we made there and got to meet people and get to know them better, but also just the connections we made traveling down there, because we were all in a bus together for I don't know how many hours, but it was a while. So we got to know each other quite well. So that was pretty cool too. So if you have an opportunity, definitely jump on a missions trip, because it was a positive experience for me. And then Alicia wants to share a little bit too.
I really liked going to this Italian restaurant. It was really good. And I also liked meeting a lot of kids, and the restaurant was really good. It had really good food, and the drinks were really good, too.
It was very good. It was real, real Italian, and these are like the Italian sodas, and they were, yeah, super good. I mean, I had espresso, but she had the Italian soda. Okay.
Amanda Brown. I took this opportunity to go along to this mission in Canada. And I've been on several missions before, and they've always been work trips. I mean, it's just work trips. You're here to work. And so I was a little bit baffled at first because this was a relationships trip. This was a coming alongside these sweet people that, I mean, if you think Kalispell is isolated and it takes a long time to get here and we're out of the way of everything, imagine Hungry Horse. Way back there and back Hungry Horse, about four or five times further than Hungry Horse. Very isolated place and incredibly beautiful. And the people were just amazing, kind, solid, loving Christian people. Glenn and Heidi, who were the pastor and his wife of this little church, just committed, quiet, hardworking, resolved, just straightforward. I was surprised that there were a lot of people in the church the day we were there, and it seemed like maybe a third of them came in from other churches. It wasn't close, but they came in to simply support this fellowship and maybe say hello to us, too. I thought that was very sweet. For myself, I didn't send pictures because I didn't take many pictures. I was very blessed by the family who took us in and let us stay in their log mansion. It was beautiful. Such, again, quiet, sweet, amazing people. The children ran and played, and just it was wonderful. So it was a different kind of mission trip. You know, it wasn't about how much I could work or how much we could accomplish or what we could get done, even though we did manage to get some things done. I rearranged rocks in the landscaping in front of the church. So, but it was a wonderful experience, and my hope is that, you know, if you feel the Lord calling you to join on the next mission trip, just a gentle, still small voice, consider listening, because it was great experience.
I was able to go to the Cranbrook mission trip, and as Glenda said, it really was more of a relationship trip than a hard work trip. I was able to help with the Sunday school class that happened after the worship time, so I was able to help with the children. And I really did see the challenge that you have in a small church when the pastor and his wife are doing all the jobs, they're carrying all the hats. And Pastor Steve's wife, Shauna, was the one who did children's church. So we went out of this hotel where they hold church into like a courtyard area, and the kids are running amok while Shauna is trying to get the key to get us into the breakfast room where we're supposed to have children's church. And, you know, there was a challenge with people being new at the front desk at the hotel and not knowing we were there. And so it took a little bit before Shauna was able to get the key and we were able to get in. So I just really was grateful that we were able to be there and help. It was a good lesson in fellowship with other people. People were very welcoming and friendly. The hosts that I stayed with, Kevin and Kathy, were very friendly and hospitable and shared some of their life and their story with me and I with them. And it was very encouraging to just lift up other believers and to, in turn, be lifted up by them. So I would second what Glenda said. If you have an opportunity to go, go. It's great. It was a great experience. It was very encouraging. And I was blessed to be a part of it.
It's a little scary all on my own up here. I was very blessed to be able to go to the Cranbrook mission trip, and like Miss Glenda said, it doesn't really feel like a missions trip because it's so personal and relational and doesn't feel like you're doing a lot of manual labor or any kind of labor. But I was able to help Miss Julie with worship, and that was really, really a fun experience, definitely out of my comfort zone, but it was fun. I got to stay with my best friend who couldn't make it tonight, but she also went on the trip. We got to stay with the Addams family, and they did not have a daughter named Wednesday. But they did have a daughter that we got to stay with, and that was so fun. It was like a sleepover, and we just got to fellowship with other believers, which was such a blessing. I think they blessed us more than we blessed them. And I was also really worried about my food restriction on the way there and not being able to have certain foods, and I was praying about that a lot, and it turns out the host family we ended up with, the dad had celiac, so the Lord answered that prayer, and I was so grateful for that. So it's just extra confirmation that the Lord had it covered the whole time, and yeah, it was such a blessing. If you have the opportunity, go. Definitely go.
Sorry, I'm used to not having my phone at church. So. I was at both trips, so I guess I'll start with Caslow, since that's what we're talking about. On the way there, it was a lot farther than I thought it was going to be, first of all. It was like 6 and some hours of very windy, mountainous roads that were... It was tough in the van for some of us, just not being able to see well and all the turns and everything. But we needed to stop in Cranbrook on our way there, because when we went to the Cranbrook outreach, we left some things behind and we took something that we needed to return. My son took a toy home. But we stopped and had met the pastor and his wife, and our Caslow team got to meet them, and we had some fellowship with them, and that was a real blessing on the way there. And then while Dan and I and our family, we know the Stewarts pretty well. That's the pastor and his family. And I think the pastor baptized one of our kids when they visited Edmonton, actually, when we were there. But we just had a really great time being in their home, and like everybody said, Canadians are crazy hospitable, you guys. Like, they're so welcoming, and they just come on in. Our house is your house, and their town is super-duper small. There's like 900 people, I think, probably, in counting every last person and to the, like, person, probably. It's very tiny. On Saturday, some of the kids went to the beach, and they went in the bay, and they were swimming. And then the pastor's wife and I, after that, we went downtown to run a couple of errands. And she was talking to, like, everybody. We were going into a shop. She's like, oh, I need to talk to that person. You just go ahead and go in there. I'll meet you in a second. And so she talked to about 9 people in the half hour we were there, like, people all over the place. I mean, these people are involved in their community, and they moved from, like, Western BC. The Lord called them specifically to go to Caslow, and it is very isolated. So for us to go and visit them, I think, was a huge encouragement and a big relief and a blessing, because they're on 100% of the time. Like, they don't have an assistant pastor. They do have a worship leader, but he's like every week. I mean, everybody's every week doing everything. And they don't have a children's church much, because they don't have a set amount of kids that are coming. And so they did have kids that Sunday, and I was able to, by the grace of God, have a lesson from what we used to do when we were in Edmonton. And we just, like, scrounged up all the materials that we needed to do the lesson, and blessed the kids that were there, besides just the kids on the team. And they really liked it. The little girl, who was a little bit older when she was there, she was saying, are you guys going to be here next week for the baptism? Because they were having a baptism the following week. And I said, no, we have to go home today. And she was so sad. She really wanted, like, our kids to be there. It was a big shot in the arm for them. And just speaking from our perspective, as, you know, people who are living, you know, far away from people we know, when we were living in Edmonton, when people came to visit us, like when Pastor Stacy and Bob and Dina Case came and visited us in 2020, just before COVID, like, that was super encouraging. It was a big deal for us. And anytime people came, like we had several teams actually come from the church here. So we felt like, or I felt like anyways, it was kind of a chance to give back for the times that people came to visit us. And then regarding Cranbrook, oh, sorry. So there's a picture up here of leading worship on Sunday. It was such a congregational experience because I had laryngitis the entire weekend that we were there. And it was a huge blessing because Joanna backed me up and she was carrying with Ava most of the singing and I was just playing. And we were making a joyful noise to the Lord. So that was really good. But then when we were in Cranbrook, as everybody has said, it was another trip of fellowship and encouragement. But also, in the case of going to Cranbrook, we did a lot of, like, touring around, and they wanted to show us things, and I could totally identify with that, because when people came to visit us, we wanted to, like, show them where we lived. And so Pastor Steve's family owns a candy store. Like, he's a chocolatier, and they took us to their shop, and they let the kids, like, choose candy that they wanted to have. I mean, it was kind of amazing. So it was in this little picturesque town not far from Cranbrook, and we were hanging out at lunch. We were hanging out on the square. There was people everywhere, people from the church. The night we got there, we had a huge barbecue. So we were just, like, really hanging out with the church the whole weekend, and it was so much fun. It was only just kind of a shame that we couldn't have stayed longer in some ways because they had a baptism after the service on Sunday, and it was out at a lake close by, but we had to kind of bounce out pretty soon after the baptism was over. But, like, so many people in the church showed up, and everybody was hanging out and just chatting and fellowshipping, and they made us feel like we were just a part of their church, which was really great. They didn't treat us like outsiders, and we didn't feel like outsiders. At least I didn't feel like an outsider. But on behalf of my kids who were too shy to come up here and share anything, they really were blessed to be able to go to be able to return to Canada since we were so abruptly removed from that ministry. And they just were excited, and they were very involved, and, like, they were meeting people in the church and doing things with others, and they were hanging out with the kids in Cranbrook, which encouraged those kids too, because there's fresh, you know, like, Christian friends to play with, since Christians are kind of a rarer breed, I would say. Like, there's a minority factor there, especially in smaller towns, but they had a great time, and we just are so thankful for the opportunity to go. We thank the church for allowing us to have these trips, and I will echo what everyone has said, because I say this to people all the time anyways. Go on a short-term trip. Just do. Like, it doesn't matter. If the Lord is leading you, if you have any kind of a desire, inkling, just go. So.
Well, good evening. Are you guys blessed by that? I tell you, I'm very blessed because in June, we had at one point two mission trips going on at the same time, and we still had things functioning well here at home base. So that was really tremendous. And we don't do missions because, you know, we learned it at some conference that missions would be fun, which missions a lot of times are really fun, and there's a lot of great food, and you meet wonderful people. But Jesus is the one that told us to go into all the world and make disciples, right? And then some people make disciples where they are, and then other people leave their country and their comfort zone, and they go to other countries to be able to make disciples and preach the gospel and share. And so missions can take a lot of different forms, so to speak. And so when I think about a long-term missionary who's left their country and they've gone to another country, one of the goals that I have when I think about a long-term missionary is, how do we keep the long-term missionary long-term? And there are so many challenges. If you've ever traveled internationally and maybe you've tried to do banking, or, you know, something happened and you had to maybe interact with people on a whole nother level outside of a safe tour group, missionaries, experience incredible trial just with the day-to-day, with their visas or car insurance, or if their car breaks down or getting a part. And sometimes your whole day is waiting in line just to go get something done. And that may or may not happen when you get to the front of the line. And so there's a wonderful passage in the book of Acts, and it's in Acts chapter 11, and just illustrates, I think, a beautiful heart regarding missions. And this is in Acts chapter 11, and in these days, verse 27, prophets came from Jerusalem to Antioch, and then one of them named Agabus stood up and showed by the Spirit that there's going to be a great famine throughout all the world, which also happened in the days of Julius Caesar, that's a drink. Then the disciples, each according to his ability, determined to send relief to the brethren dwelling in Judea. And so everyone, according to their ability and their determination, decided to send relief to their brothers in Judea. And this is another neat verse, verse 30. This they also did and sent it to the elders by the hands of Barnabas and Saul. So it wasn't even just the people who gave as the Lord laid on their heart, but it was also Barnabas and Saul that ended up delivering the aid, which I find quite remarkable. And so you could probably say we're going into all the world, or we're helping people go into all the world through, you know, material gifts or financial gifts, but absolutely through prayer and supporting. And so the ministry of missions here at Calvary Chapel, it could not happen without the whole body of Christ participating. And so I'm super blessed to be a part of it and have the opportunity to lead trips, and then also with Pastor Dan and Julie here in helping us coordinate more mission trips and more mission opportunities for you. I mean, everyone who is up here said, if you have the opportunity to go, go. And we paid them. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. No, that was definitely genuine. And what's great is you go in the places where the Lord opens up the opportunity. So regarding Ukraine, this is my fourth trip in about a year and a half since the full-scale invasion in 2022. And some people have asked me over the last year and a half or so, well, Pastor David, why is it all of a sudden you have this interest in Ukraine? Well, one, it's a biblical interest, because when we see Russia amassing military hardware, anywhere, really, you think, oh, Ezekiel 38 and 39 and prophetic, you know, type things. Well, the invasion happened, and then the Lord started opening up doors of opportunity through relationships that we had. And so he's not opening up doors right now to go to Uganda. We're not getting invitations, or at least me personally, to go to Hawaii. I mean, the other team did. Dan led a trip this last spring to Hawaii, to Maui, actually, to do relief work there. And so we just want to be faithful with the doors that the Lord opens up. And sometimes you knock on the door that you think that God is opening, and then that door stays closed. And you say, okay, you know, you don't bring out a crowbar and try to get through or pick the lock or anything. You say, okay, Lord, we'll wait on you. And so we're going to talk about Ukraine for just a minute. And Mark, you're free to come up whenever you want. Mark is one of our board members, elders here at Calvary Chapel. You can give him a hand. And Mark was my travel buddy. And I mentioned to him that there was a potential trip coming up that I'll talk about shortly. And I said, hey, I might be tapping your shoulder. You were one of two people at my last Ukraine presentation that I said, hey, if you want to come to Ukraine, if there's an opportunity, write your name down. So he was one of those people. And literally, we had a conversation on a Sunday afternoon, and then I think the following Wednesday or following week, I said, Mark, the Lord's opened up the door, and I would really love for you to go. And he said, yes, just right off the bat. He said, I've already talked about it with my wife. I believe it's the Lord. And I'm thinking, this is sweet. And that was just another confirmation that it's not just me, right? So a couple things about Ukraine that I want to mention, and I told Mark that he can jump in. He's got some very specific pictures at the end that he wants to share with you, but I want to do some education. This is the Ukrainian flag. You're probably well aware of that. You've seen it around, but do you know why the Ukrainian flag is like this? Do you know why it looks like this? Do you know why the blue is on top and the gold is on the bottom? Do you guys know? Here's why. Here's the next picture. That's why. The fields of wheat and the gorgeous blue skies. There's little clouds in there, but we were at the tail end of our trip driving through a field, and I'll tell you more about that. And I told Jenya, who was driving, I said, Jenya, stop the car. And I just took this picture, and this is why the Ukrainian flag is the Ukrainian flag. And I tell you what, the majority of the farming that they do is dry farming. And however God did it after the flood, Ukraine ended up with really, really, really good soil. They were telling us, the farmers, they say, you put anything into the ground and it just grows. And so the wheat there, it's almost ready to harvest, and the wheat almost looks like cartoon wheat. You know, this was right outside my window, but the wheat kernels were this thick and the heads were leaning over like this, and it's dry farming. It's absolutely astounding. And then I come back to our wonderful and beautiful Flathead Valley, and we have wheat fields around here, and you drive around, and little narrow stalks and the little narrow heads, and they're about ready to be harvested too, you know, in the coming weeks. And so, but this is why the Ukrainian flag is the Ukrainian flag. So now you know the blue always goes on top because of the sky. All right? You learned something new tonight? A couple other things here is in the next photo. I talked about relationships, and these are some of the relationships that the Lord has blessed us with. You have on the left Zhenya and his wife Luda, and Mark and Irina, and Pastor Zhenya, he oversees all of the Calvary Chapels in Ukraine. So he's the Calvary Chapel coordinator for Ukraine, and we have the distinct privilege of supporting him along with a handful of other churches so that he can do that. You can imagine there's not a lot of, well, there's no pastor in Ukraine that is fully supported by the church, if at all, because of what's going on. And that's probably pretty common with churches in third world countries or, you know, definitely in Ukraine right now. And so he's able to dedicate the majority of his time to church planning, supporting the pastors that are there. And then on the right, Vitaly and Natalia. Vitaly has a ministry that I'll talk about called Open Door Ministry. Vitaly spoke here about a year and a half ago while our other group was in Israel touring. And Vitaly is an amazing man. Sometimes they call him the connected man. He knows everybody. And if he doesn't know somebody, he knows a guy that knows somebody. And he gets stuff done, and he's truly, truly amazing. He's one of the chaplains that we've been able to go over and minister to, and he has a group of guys that he's involved with, a lot of humanitarian aspects. So we've gone to Ukraine 4 times. 2 of those times have been directed at investing in and just caring for law enforcement and military chaplains, and those trips were wonderful. And then the other 2 trips were more of the relational trip that you heard about. So less conference, teaching, you know, those type of things, and more just building relationships for the future, for even future mission trips. This is a picture of Ukraine overlaid on top of the United States. And you can see on one hand, Ukraine is large. It would just about cover all of Montana. I believe it's a few square miles larger than Montana. But then on the other hand, compared to the United States, it's small. And it's really interesting to go to Ukraine and realize that you have a country like Russia fully engaged in trying to take territory, kill people, and push their borders to the west in this little country. But Ukraine is one of the top 10 producers of grain and wheat for Europe, number 1 in sunflower oil, number 1 in honey. They have 37.6 million people population. Of that, 6.6 million are refugees in Europe that have fled Ukraine, and then another 3.7 million IDPs. What is an IDP, you ask? An IDP means internally displaced person. So because of war or famine or, you know, whatever's going on in any particular country, if you have an IDP, that means that they're not living in their own home and they've had to move to another part of the country, whether it's a refugee camp or family members or something like that. So that's what an IDP is. This is a map of Ukraine, and I forgot to take the little arrow off of where we've been before, but on this trip was interesting. We flew into this little town here called Zeshov. And I tell you what, these Eastern European countries and their spelling of words in their languages, it's quite challenging. Krakow is located about here. Warsaw would be located about right here. So we flew into Zeshov. We took a car to a border town here and took the train through Lviv, Ternopil, and then on to Kyiv. Maybe you're wondering, well, how close did you and Mark get to the fighting? Not close at all, pretty much. Not close at all. The fighting right now, you've probably heard in the news, is in Kharkiv right here. And then the line would be kind of down here, and then it would start coming across the Dnieper River and then down in this way. And so this is where the fighting, or the demarcation line would be, is far to the east. This is the, oops, that's not the train we took. That's the train we took. That's the train we took. This is out of Poland, and the trains were actually, would you say, pretty comfortable?
No car sickness, so okay. It was comfortable.
Or train sickness.
Or train sickness.
Yeah. So this is the train that we were boarding in Poland, and the only real long line that we had was going through Polish passport control. And so there's a picture of a line there that snakes through here and then underneath here and then back into the building and then through. And it wasn't necessarily taking a long time for processing. It's just that everybody queues up early. So once they started processing and the line started moving, it was just like a slow plod. One of the interesting things about going in on train is that when you cross the border into Ukraine, the border guards come on the train. They run their dogs, they do their counts, and they secure every car, and then they do passport control car by car, and you don't have to get out of your seat. Actually, it's preferred if you just stay seated and let the border guards do their job. And then this is while the train is moving, and then they get to the next stop, the border guards come off, and then people who are traveling domestically hop on. So it was really, really slick in that way. You know that the Ukrainian hot dogs, if you've been to a trip report, they're genius. They're genius because they have a bun that has a hole in it that receives the dog after they put the condiments in it, and all the condiments surround the hot dog. And so you've seen this picture maybe before, but I don't know if you saw this one when we were gone here, because this is my new hot dog picture. This is the next one. There we go. Yeah. So Mark finally got a hot dog.
And it was pretty good. Costco quality? Not quite, but darn good.
But how often are you going to get a Costco dog in Ukraine? You know, definitely. I think it was better than Kirkland quality, but that's just me. All right. This is the genesis of our trip. You know, I talked about relationships. Well, we had a gentleman in our church talk to me one day. And he said, Pastor David, with what you're doing in Ukraine and some of your experience with law enforcement and chaplains and trauma training and some of the stuff you've done in Latin America with human trafficking and, you know, with the child exploitation and rescuing them and stuff like that, there's a guy that you need to meet. Okay, who do I need to meet? And so he said, you need to meet Mykola Kuleba. Who is Mykola Kuleba? He was the presidential commissioner for children's rights in Ukraine under President Zelensky and the previous president from 2014 to 2021. What does that mean? That means that everything that has to do with kids in the entire nation of Ukraine. This guy oversaw it and was a direct report to the president. Amazing. And I'm thinking, why would I need to meet this guy? And so I sat on it for a while, and then he said to me again after a couple months, he goes, you really need to meet this guy. I'm like, okay. You know, and the gentleman in our church, if he tells you something twice, you know you need to just step out in faith. And so he is a wonderful, wonderful man. He founded a ministry called Save Ukraine while he was the commissioner that focuses on rescuing children that have been deported to Russia or rescuing children that are in Russian-occupied territories. So that's what he does. And they also do evacuations, which is a really, really big thing with the war in eastern Ukraine. And then, of course, they also, as they're rescuing kids, they're also involved in rescuing families. And so here's a picture from their website of some of the kids that they've rescued. And their website is tremendous, and you could go to saveukraineua.org, and you could look it up for yourself and see all the amazing things that they do. Just the intel that they get and the information that they get and figuring out, well, who needs to be rescued? Who's a candidate to be rescued? It's really, really intriguing how they do that, how they coordinate with the government, and they are they're doing really, really good work. This is off their website. This is the three things here where they rescue, they restore, and they build. And so the people that they rescue, they bring them to Hope and Healing Centers. Three are for internally displaced people with families and children, one for returned children kidnapped by Russia, one for sexual abuse survivors, and two for abandoned elderly. And so they have these homes where they can go once they get them out of harm's way, where they can start giving them the psychological and the social aid and the spiritual aid and just everything that they need to be able to, you know, rebuild their life. And they're there for about 3 months, and then they move on. And then they have 127 modular homes where they're able to house people. A lot of the homes are connected with their community centers. And they have 15 of those. And Mark and I, we had the privilege of visiting one of the newest community center in Irpin, which, where's Irpin? Irpin is just northwest of Kyiv. And it's next door to a town that you may have heard of in March and April of 2022 called Bucha. If you remember the Russian atrocities that took place there, Irpin is not mentioned as much, but they experienced great and grave difficulty. So what do these community centers do? So the community centers, they offer help to local communities in two specific ways. Number one, the help is for families with special needs kids. So if you have a special needs kid, unless you have a lot of money and you're paying for some private outfit, there's nothing for you or for your child. No support, learning is very, very difficult if you're in one of those situations. And then the second thing that they do is child development, anything needed to develop a child. And so you can think that war has probably disrupted children's development. And I'll tell you, one of the aggravating things that Mark and I heard is that of all the things that Russia is targeting of non-military significance, okay, and I'm not going to get too off track here, but they are also targeting places like book publishing companies. And they just took one out about a month ago in Kharkiv. So if you could imagine if there was one major or a handful of major book publishing companies in the United States and their focus was homeschool material. And we had Canada, they got agitated, they ran out of maple syrup and they're attacking the United States and they're you know, they're coming out, and then they start pounding our publishing companies that publish homeschool material. I mean, it's just, what's going on is absolutely unthinkable, and we were able to hear it firsthand. And so Save Ukraine is helping people get back up on their feet, and of the 15 centers, they have four more coming online in this year, soon, and then 25 by the end of the year. And it's just amazing what they're doing. And so this is in the new center, and I'll introduce you to a couple people here. this is Mykola. This is his wife, Natalia, and she is a chaplain in one of the chaplain brigades that they have in Ukraine for the military. This is Xena, and she was our main contact. She's the communications director and development director for Save Ukraine. And this is Alex, and he is a right-hand man to Mykola and an engineer, and he did a lot of plans for a piece of property that they're working on right now. And then these are kids that were in the community center that were just kind of hanging out with us and wanted to be with us. And you can see they didn't give us that flag. We brought them a flag because in my previous trips, that they like flags. There's a lot of patriotism going on, and they want to honor people who are willing to visit their country at this time. And isn't it true, just the response of the people when we go? Like, they just are so thankful that we came.
It truly was genuine. Even in this setting here, the kids were not pulled out saying, okay, we got to take some publicity pictures. They ran to us. They came to us with drawings and colorings that they had done just previous and sought us out while we were having a cup of coffee and talking about some administrative stuff. So the children are craving support. They're craving a feeling that they belong and that they are accepted and that they're in a safe place, and they feel that here. And that's one of the major focuses of this whole operation, is to give the children a normality of life that they had lost. And you know how important that is to kids. We see it even with our own VBS and children's ministries here. Kids want to have that sort of interaction with adults that truly care, and they're getting that at these centers.
So this is that flag, and the kids from the center and the special needs kids painted it for us and gave it to us. And so this is really, really precious. One of the girls that we met that was getting some tutoring, she made this really pretty, it's just hard to travel with paper products like this, this really pretty craft here. And then also the kids gave both Mark and I a bag that they hand painted. And so it's touching even now. Mm-hmm. All right, next picture. This is Mykola showing us plans for a 10-acre, multifaceted center where they're able to have foster homes for kids that have lost their parents. They're able to do job training. There's going to be a church on this property. This is in Irpin. And what's miraculous about this is that on one hand, Russia used this particular property that was gifted to them by the city in their attack in early 2022. That's mind-blowing. And we were walking around it, and we saw some of the buildings with the bullet holes. But what's really amazing is the city gave it to Save Ukraine Ministry rather than sell it for a lot of money to a developer who wanted to build block housing and high-rise apartments. And they have an amazing testimony in the government of Ukraine. This is an example, but this is one of the places where they had the modular homes just outside of that center in Irpin, and we got to speak with one of the men there. And then on the way back, Xena and our driver, they took us to this monument, and it's a little heavy, but I can't imagine how heavy it was for the people there. When Russia came into that area, these people were trying to flee, and they were obliterated by the Russian military. And so all the cars were put in a pile. That's all they can do for a monument.
This is right off a major highway, so the daily traffic sees this as a reminder of the battle that's being fought. most of these their cars are, they were all burned,
riddled with bullets.
Looking at walking around closely, the driver's sides were hit with machine gun fire. And again, these were families. These were people simply trying to get out. These were not combatants. They had nothing to do with defending the city. This was moms and dads just trying to get their kids away from the danger. And they were stopped rather than allowed to escape.
Yeah. Before Mark and I left Kyiv, and I tell you, we had some wild Uber drivers.
They get paid by the trip, not by the minute.
We're still alive, but we had some time, and so we were able to get our Uber driver and schedule it to take us to this monument. This monument is called Mother Ukraine or Lady Ukraine, and it would really be the equivalent of their Statue of Liberty. And she was, if you go back one, back one slide, when was the date? Right there, 1981 is when they finally built that. But plans had been in place for decades. And 203 feet tall, and you get a picture of the size. If you can see, do you see the people right there? So that's the 203 feet monument. The Statue of Liberty, not to compete, is 305 feet. But it was large. But what's interesting is in later 2022, on one of the Intel feeds that I was looking at, I saw pictures of workers who were welding up a trizub, or the Ukrainian trident, to replace the hammer and sickle that had been on since 1981. And so you can see right there, that's the old hammer and sickle. And then, so Mark and I got to see the new shield with the trizub, which we've talked about before, and it's history. If you want to do a little bit of deep dive on Ukraine, just type in history of the Ukrainian trizub or the Ukrainian trident, and you'll find out that Ukrainian culture has been there for hundreds and hundreds of years, even though Ukraine officially, politically, gained their independence in 1991. If you go to Ukraine, you gotta have borscht. You gotta have borscht. And that was, you had borscht?
Borscht. Good. There's a red and a green.
Go with the red.
Red.
The red beet borscht is tremendous. This is really us waiting for the train to start heading to Ternopil. That's where Pastor Zhenya is. And you see a lot of architecture and vehicles that really are still kind of part of that Soviet era. And so this bus was definitely one of them. But trains are really, really big in Europe, much more so than they are here, and especially in Eastern Europe. So when we got to Ternopil, one of the other things that we wanted to do is we wanted to see Vitaly's ministry, Open Door Ministry. He was in the States, and so his deputy, Ruslan, was the one to show us around. He showed us a piece of property where they do kid camps every summer. They rent that. He showed us their warehouse that I'll show you in just a minute. But Ruslan didn't speak any English before the war in 2022, and when he got involved with Open Door Foundation with Vitaly, and he started helping out as his deputy, he's talking to all these people all over the world. He had to learn English on the fly, and he's absolutely conversational English, and so it was a real blessing. One of the things that his dad did that he was raised in is in a sewing or textile type business, and so he had a vision to have a jacket company and be able to have the business model such that 50% of all the coats that they make, they would give to orphans. Well, as the word got out, people were like, we're so behind that. They are supporting his ministry to the point where they give 100% of their jackets to orphans. It's absolutely mind-boggling what they do. And the jackets that they make are absolutely incredible for a couple of reasons. One, he was telling us about the quality of these jackets. And so afterwards, you know, if you don't want to pass them around, this is kind of a spring rain jacket. But he was so proud of these jackets, and he's saying, you know what? The buttons that we use, you could get a button for 10 cents, but we get the 90-cent buttons because they're good buttons, and God sees this. And then he goes, and we have our name printed on the button. And the name of their ministry is called Hugs. Aw, yeah, you guys can say aw. And I'll show you. Yeah, this one is really cool. One of the neat things that they do that is so great is that on the inside of their jackets, where it says Hugs, right here is the Aaronic blessing from Numbers chapter, is it 6 or 9?
6.
Wait, it's 6. And that's the, may the Lord bless you and keep you, make his face shine upon you and be gracious to you, may he look upon you with favor and give you peace. And so the idea is that God's favor and blessing would hug these children. And
consider these jackets are going to kids that have nothing. They may have escaped a situation with nothing but the shoes on their feet if they were lucky enough to have the shoes. This jacket is high quality. It is something that is given to the child. It is theirs. It's something they can own and be proud of. And it's a big deal to a kid.
Look at that one. That's amazing. So you can come up, take a look at those. All right, what do we have next? Oh, this is the warehouse. Truly remarkable. I didn't even write down the tonnage of materials that have come through this warehouse in Ternopil and then to people in need in Ukraine and in the East. And one of the current things that's happening now is there's a ministry in Holland, of all places, where the guy had a vision for something like 1 million banana boxes. He got a vision of 1 million banana boxes for Ukraine. And so they load up banana boxes with about a week and a half's worth of supplies for a family of six. And they load them on trucks and they just come into Ukraine through this warehouse week after week after week.
And this turns over about every week. This place is emptied and new supplies are brought in. And the banana boxes are just really sturdy, good boxes. There's no bananas.
And there's no bananas about that. And they also do military boxes, too. So they pack these boxes that are just more oriented towards someone who would be on the front line. This is Mark, and he's showing off some of the things that the chaplains and the people come back after their drop-offs. That they'll all kinds of spent military hardware, and I had to tell Mark, no, you cannot take a rocket tube home with us.
Couldn't get it in the suitcase.
Yeah. We were traveling pretty light. We were also shown outside of Ternopil three houses, and it's just miraculous. The first one is a hospice home, and it's fairly new. They have a couple that oversee a hospice ministry, I believe, with about 14 residents. This, when they moved here in the last couple months, that was their second move. So they moved from one place because it wasn't safe and there was shelling to another place. Then they had to move, and then now they're in western Ukraine and they're very, very safe. And Mark and I got to meet a number of them and see their smiles, and they were just happy to have a visitor and have a touch and something different. And then go back to the other one. There we go. So next to this house is a house that is 1 month or so away from being a foster home. And they'll have, I think, about 10 to 12 kids at the foster home. And then next door to that is a home that is probably 4 or 5 months away from being finished that will be an orphanage. And so the need is so great. And there are many, we're discovering that there are many, many ministries that are doing very, very similar things. And just a quick point, I can't remember at what point in the trip, but I said to Mark, I go, Mark, Ruslan has a ministry where they have jackets that they give them only to orphans. You can't even buy them. And Save Ukraine, they deal with a lot of orphans. I wonder if they could use some jackets. And so I texted Xena. I said, hey, could you guys use some jackets, different sizes or what? So she goes, absolutely. I said, how many? She texts back, 500. Okay. So I text Ruslan, and he goes, oh, that's a lot. And I go, Ruslan, what if we want to leave some money to help support that? He goes, we could do 100. We could do 100. Great. So I got we got them connected with Save Ukraine, and they're already working on another project. So I thought that was a pretty cool connection. You can go to the next picture. Maybe a little bit out of ordinary or out of order, but I think most nights that we were in Ukraine, we heard air raid sirens. That's their reality. Sometimes Russia will take a plane off in Russia to just get high enough to set off Ukrainian air raid sirens across the country and cause panic and terror, and then they just land it, every night. So most nights we had air raid sirens going off. And the people that we were with, they said, look, if it was a real deal or there was some kind of problem, you know, we'll come and get you or whatever. Well, after air raid siren in the middle of the night in Chernobyl, the next morning I looked on one of my feeds, and I'm looking at that, looking at those missile tracks, those cruise missiles, and I'm like, it went right over Chernobyl. But then I realized, you know, when God calls you to do something, you do it. And this is their reality. Every time they hear an air raid siren, they have to make that decision. Do we go in the basement? Do we move? And they struggle with that. It's a weight. This is the church in Chernobyl that I was able to speak at, and it was just a blessing to see many, many people that we've seen before, and then also people that have come here. So not just Vitaly, he wasn't there, but a couple pictures here. You've met Zhenya. He came here just about a year ago. The guy in the middle is John Markey. That's Aaron Markey's brother that you haven't met. But then the next picture, Aaron Markey came and spoke at our church last fall. And then that's his wife, Dara. They just had another baby. And this is their daughter that I was hanging out with for a few minutes. And she was pretty cute with her little crackers. This is a picture of the lake outside of Chernobyl, and people coming and going, renting paddle boats and doing different things on a Sunday afternoon. This is a group of kids doing a Ukrainian cultural presentation. And so they were doing dances, they were doing little speeches about Ukraine, and they were doing songs. It was really, really special. This is the same street that the Calvary Chapel is on, and just to give you an idea of what Eastern Europe looks like, it's very, very common. Chernobyl is a bustling town with lots of young people because they have 5 universities, and then they also have trade colleges there on top of that. This is how we finished our trip. Zhenya and Luda invited us to be a part of their family celebration that they do every year during Pentecost, and we went to the farm that she grew up, that her dad and her brothers still farm, and we got to the back end of this property, and they've been mowing it and making it into a beautiful, you know, kind of summer barbecue area, and Zhenya made his smoked pork, and it was a really special time to hang out with them. This is an old stone barn building that Luda remembers, you know, playing in as kids with the neighbors. And Mark made friends with Luda's dad.
That's on a swing that overlooks about a 30-foot drop-off, and it's hung with chains that, you know, if OSHA had seen this, I don't know. But anyway, I've got a new friend there.
Yep. Yeah, Mark just bore his heart for hours. But Luda's dad doesn't know English.
No, really. But he smiled a lot.
Yeah, he smiles a lot.
We're about the same age, so that was the connection.
They made great friends. And so we were with their nieces and nephews, and we were playing kind of their Ukrainian version of bocce ball, and that was really wonderful. This is a picture that Mark wanted to comment on.
Yeah, this is just this is outside the train station, so that gigantic structure that you saw in a few pictures back is behind us here, and we're looking into the main city. Kyiv is about 3 million people. It's a big place with all the issues that any metropolitan-type area has, and it's so fascinating. We've seen the same thing in Israel right now when we watch, Maureen and I watch quite a few YouTubes of webcams and just walking tours of Israel. And life is going on. There's activity, the restaurants are open, people are going to the stores, and yet 20 miles away, there's this devastation and the crisis of combat. The same thing is happening here. Life is moving on. People are doing their normal routine, except the air raid sirens, except the contrails. That's a new reality of life, and it's something that this entire generation is going to have to live with the rest of their life, telling their kids about, and then their kids, God willing, will not have to live with any of those personal memories. But it's going to take that long for this sort of emotional, you know, daily existence to you know, take its course. So just wanted you to see kind of the big town and move, next slide, please. This is in the Chernobyl Calvary Chapel. There's about 15 Calvaries in Ukraine, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. And again, Xenia oversees those as kind of the point of contact for all the Calvary contacts to each other. But that the kids there that are looking at a video game, that could be anywhere in the world. It could be anywhere in this country. It's a moment of normality where friends are hanging around looking at a goofy screen. Do I approve of that? Generically, no. But in this situation, it's a moment of normal kiddom for these kids. And so, yeah, go to it, boys. Enjoy your fellowship, and you're in church. So it's a good thing. And this dear, sweet lady, my new grandma, doesn't speak a word of English. She sat next to me in church during Pastor David's lesson, and she didn't have a Bible. The lesson, obviously, is in English, being translated into Ukrainian. And through the grace of Blue Letter Bible and a good web connection, I was able to open my phone to a Ukraine translation. And I went to the Book of Ruth, which Pastor David was teaching on, and let her use that during the course of the sermon. And tears, hugs, hanging onto my arm, didn't speak a word of English, but she would not stop talking. I'm hoping I think they were all good things, because it was, you know, a lot of this, a lot of hugs, a lot of just looks, and, you know, you could just see thank you. Mm-hmm. And it was just such a personal, touching moment. And she's obviously old enough to have lived through more than one violent conflict, I'm sure. And to have to live through another one now, people shouldn't have to do that. But anyway, I just wanted to show you that wherever you go, whatever our background, Christ pulls us together. We are brothers and sisters. Whether we speak the language or not, we speak the language of prayer, and we speak the language of compassion. And that was my moment.
Mm. Yeah, there's definitely something called a ministry of presence, where you just go into a hospital room, or you go to a home, or you go to some situation in another country, and you bring the presence of Jesus in that, and you pray for them, you're with them, and if there are needs, you can serve them, you can provide for those needs or whatever. But all across the board, they were all so grateful that we were willing to go to their country that's at war right now. This is the train in Lviv. We're in the middle of the night walking to the train station, you know, beginning to head home.
I got to say, too, and
this is my travel buddy there. I put that in there just for Mark, because I appreciate
it. I've known about
so
two or three people in my long life that actually have more energy at the end of the day than at breakfast, and this is one of those guys. It's amazing.
So Mark was an amazing travel buddy, to say the least, but there is always something when you get back to the United States and you get through passport control and they say, hey, welcome back to the United States. Like, hey, this is where I belong, you know, as far as, you know, now, until Jesus comes back, right? Mm-hmm. And then finally, I just want to end with this, and then maybe we'll just pray, have some Q&A. The will of God will not take you where the grace of God can't keep you. And so whatever it is that God is calling you to do, to take a greater stand in your family for truth and the gospel, to say no to sin, to go on mission trip, and maybe for you a mission trip of faith, and a big step of faith would be just to go, okay, I'm going to save up, I'm going to get a passport, and I'm going to go on one of those Canada trips. That sounds like my speed. Great, praise the Lord. But just know that if God's calling you to do it, He's going to be with you. He's going to see you through. That's the wonderful thing where, you know, are there some risks in going to Canada? Yeah. Are there some risks in going to a country that has an active war zone in the east? Yeah. Were we safe? Yeah. God was watching out for us. Was the food good? Yeah. You know, and you get to meet new people and explore new things, and it's just, it's really, really wonderful. And so before Pastor Dan comes back up, you know, I just want to let you know that there's more mission opportunities that are coming up. There's going to be more outreach opportunities that are going to come up for our own community. And sometimes those happen quick. But the people that are actively participating, you know, they're going to probably get the text or get the call. Or if their names are on Dan's list, you know, if you sign, you know, I'm kind of interested in Costa Rica, or I'm kind of interested in the next Canada trip or whatever, get on Dan's list so that when those opportunities come up, that it's easier for us to find you, okay? We'll do our best to make announcements, but jump in there. Time is short, and you can make a big difference in somebody's life just by going, whether it's laying brick or painting or cleaning something or teaching a Bible study or just bringing the love of Jesus or, you know, being that person where it's like, okay, you're assigned to these three suitcases, don't lose them, and you're a mule for this trip, legal things only. But we're going, and we need extra hands. That happens sometimes on mission trips. So let's do this. Let's, if you guys have any questions, we could probably take a couple questions, and then we'll have Pastor Dan come up and then close this out. Wow. Okay. How can you make a difference in Ukraine? How about that question? You can make a big difference by praying for the pastors that are there, the Calvary Chapel pastors, for Zhenya and his family. We have their picture up on our missions board. You can pray for the people in their church. You can pray for the other Calvary Chapel pastors. You can pray for the people in Ukraine, the Christians that are trying to be a light and a witness, and their country's at war. You can pray for the law enforcement chaplains and the military chaplains that are doing really, really, really important work of bringing Jesus into those somewhat closed communities. And you can go when the opportunity arises, and you can support, you know, when there's an opportunity to give. You know, we're looking at, Lord, what's next for us? You know, how can we be involved and support what you're doing in Ukraine? And that's the most important thing, is that what we do, it'll never be wrongly spent if we're putting it towards kingdom things, right? Glenda had your hand up. There is such a need where they want to build a larger facility than what they currently have. That's all I know. Yeah, and then Gary, you had a question.
I just would add to what you were saying. Be a mission wherever you are. Here in the U.S., here in Montana, show God's love. Carry God's love wherever you are.
Absolutely. Yes, sir. No, the picture that I showed regarding the flight paths of the missiles, each different color represents a different type of Russian missile, and they're using I think three that I've seen on the feeds that I watch. There's ballistic, there's cruise, there's the Kinzhal, there's, you know, and then okay. So that's what the different colors represent. Okay. Yeah. Yes, Glenda, and then we'll wrap it up.
That will take those missiles out, like Iron Dome or Israel.
They do have some, and they're trying to get more there, but they don't have enough. They don't have enough. And then what's interesting, if you're tracking all of this, is the something I believe is called something like the invention of war, where things get invented so fast during wartime because somebody develops a defense or they develop an offense, and then the enemy develops really, really quick a defense for that or a counter to it, right? And in Ukraine, I was reading an article on some of the technologies that are being developed right now. The rate of that, like, you know, when you have something, hey, we've got a secret weapon. Oh, they defeated it. It's not secret. Okay, we got this new thing. It's like a matter of weeks. And it's just, it keeps on going like this. And you've seen that in the with drone. It's called the drone war. You know, drones have a whole new evil role in war now. So it's really, you know, more and more countries, especially Europe, are sending more, anti-missile type things over there. But Russia's trying to figure out just kind of like what's going on with Israel, where they're figuring out how to defeat them or overwhelm them. So, yeah. All right. Well, we got one more, and then Pastor Dan, you'll come up and wrap it up.
So what is some of the primary targets that Russia's targeting with these longer-range missiles, like the manufacturing facilities?
Electric power plants, for one. And that's one of the reasons there's rolling blackouts throughout the country, because there's simply not enough. Ukraine used to make so much electricity that they were exporting power to other parts of Europe. Now they cannot quite produce enough for their own country. So there's blackouts in areas that are planned, sometimes for several hours, simply to allow other areas that had just been blacked out to now receive power. And it kind of just rotates around, outside of an emergency blackout that might come from an air raid or so forth.
Yeah, among other things. Yeah. All right, Pastor Dan, why don't you close us out and then pray. Thank you, guys.
Well, I'm just going to quickly share something. First of all, it's awesome to hear how the Lord uses everybody in two parts of the world, using different people for different purposes. One thing that was mentioned throughout all of this was the ministry of presence. It's so easy to assume that the most important mission work can be done is doing something with your hands or being the one who preaches, which is all missions and important. But ministry of presence goes a long way, because, as Pastor David pointed out, one of our goals is to keep long-term missionaries long-term. Mm-hmm. Same applies when you visit, like in our case, going to Canada, pastors who are ministering for many years by themselves without any help every week to come and bring relief to them. And they all shared with us, for our team in Canada, how blessed they were they can take a break that Sunday. And everybody in the church says, "You're coming back, right?" Because it meant a lot. So in a ministry opportunity to go somewhere, your presence goes a long way to keep somebody be faithful to what they're called to do. Never underestimate that, right? Now, as a church, we're blessed that we have an opportunity to participate in all sorts of missions and mission works in different parts of the world that sometimes is ministry presence. At times, it will be ministry of labor, and other times we'll be just preaching and doing different things. So I'm going to just mention two things that are coming up, and then we're going to pray. And those are, we're going to have a mission trip that we are planning to go to Ensenada, Baja, Mexico, in November, from November 2nd to November 9th. If you are interested, now, we already had the sign-up list for this few months ago. If you're still interested, come up here after we're done. It will be over here by the stage, and put your name and information so we can reach out to you and write clearly so we can figure out who it is. Then put their info there. And the second one will be to Costa Rica in January. So we don't have a lot of details on that one yet, but it is coming up for the dates and so forth. If you're interested, same thing. It will be on this side of the stage, and you can put your name. And if we run out of space, if everybody puts their names, just go on the other side. Doesn't matter. So with that being said, let us pray. Heavenly Father, we do thank you for just the wonderful blessing of being part of the work that you're doing in Canada and Ukraine. Lord, that you've blessed us with a fellowship that it does the work of the ministry, not just in the valley, but throughout the world. And that you've called us to fulfill the Great Commission, to go into all the world and preach the gospel, make the disciples. And we're so grateful for these opportunities where we were able to go and come alongside of those who are in the field, who are making disciples, and encourage them and bring them support and just share life with them. Lord, we're grateful for the opportunities that you're presenting to us in upcoming months and years. And unless you return, Lord, we look forward to that. And we ask that you will just put on our hearts to continually pray for all the people we heard of tonight, Lord, and that we will be faithful to supporting one another, that if you're calling us to step out in faith to one of these trips, Lord, that we will, in faith, put our names down, knowing that you will do great things. Again, thank you for your faithfulness, for keeping everybody safe, and allowing us to go and be part of what you're doing. In Jesus' name, amen.